This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 258, brought to you by MidOhioCon, discount comic book service, and iFanboy listeners like you.
Hey, Tom, it's Bob from the office down the hall. It's good to see you, buddy. How have you been? Things have been okay for me, except that I'm a zombie now. I really wish you'd let us in. I speak for all of us when I say I understand why you folks might hesitate to submit to our demand.
Hello and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 258. My name is Connor Kilpatrick and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Ah!
And Ron Richards.
You returned to us.
I'm back.
Yay.
How are you? What'd you guys do while I was gone?
Evie. I mean, well, she's on the show. I didn't do it. She's married. Be respectful.
You already blew that.
At iFanboy.com, we like comics. We read comics every week. We read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one. They write about it on the website. We talk about it in the podcast, along with other books of the week, other topics of interest, all kinds of fun little things that happen. It's exciting. It's a fun little time we have here.
Sometimes
on the show.
Stuff just happens. It's very humorous.
Sometimes.
And inappropriate.
Did you guys know that this show is incredibly scripted?
Everything. to the last... Exactly. We never miss
a line.
It's
like a Coen Brothers script.
Yeah.
Or Mamet.
Right now I'm reading...
There's like even those O's in there.
When we talk at the same time, that's...
That's in there. Crosstalk, it says. Yeah.
Bitch is right. Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show, so we talk about the books of the week. There might be spoilers. If there are and you don't want to be spoiled, pause it. Come back after you've read your books. It'll be more fun for you and everybody. We won't have to hear complaints, even though we still do sometimes.
Do we really? I haven't heard a complaint in a while.
We get variations on the complaint.
Yeah.
How come you can spoil the one thing but not the other?
All right.
Ron.
Yes.
It's a big week. You had the pick.
It wasn't a big week. I had 18 books. It was an average week for me. Although you bought everything that came out, which I don't know how you did.
I bought different comic companies, Ron.
So do I. I had 18 books. That's no slouch. It's no, you know, but it wasn't like, you know, you would like, what did you have, like 30?
I had like 27.
That's insane. That's more comics than any man needs in a week.
Plus half of last week's books, which I had to read also.
Oh, well, that's your own fault. That's your own fault.
Did you like most of them?
It was a great week.
Okay. It was an all right week.
I had a fantastic week. I was giving out fives like candy.
Well, too bad you didn't have the pick. It's my time.
We're infringing on Ron's talk time, Josh.
Exactly.
That's a lot of lap dances, all I'm
Where's
saying.
Where's the mute button on this microphone?
So I don't know. I mean, it wasn't a great week, but it was an okay week. There was some good stuff. But it was funny how we often talk about the process of reading our books and picking the pick of the week and how you'll read one and you won't quite be sure. You'll have a couple that you might think might be the pick, or one sneaks up from the bottom of the pile and surprises you or whatever. This week it happened to be Fantastic Four was like the, I want to say like the fifth or sixth book I read in my stack, for those not keeping track at home, I read the ones I'm most excited about first down to the ones I'm least excited about. So, you know, so I read Uncanny and Avengers and Ultimate Spider-Man, stuff like that, and they're all good. I finished Fantastic Four number 584 and put it down. I'm like, that's the pick of the week. And I literally did that on my couch. I put it down, I pointed at it, and I said, that's the pick of the week.
And he yelled,
boom.
Yeah, exactly. No one. Alone in my apartment. Nobody cares. But so, I read the rest of my books, and I was, you know, I kept an open mind towards, you know, maybe one could top it or whatever. But by the time I got through all 18 of my comics, I went back to Fantastic Four. I'm like, you know, it really doesn't get any better than this when it comes to the Fantastic Four. And it might be, you know, could be described as hyperbole or whatever, but in my review, I said it, I'll say it again here. This might be as close to a perfect Fantastic Four issue as it comes. So it's a single issue, you know, in terms of telling a story and getting the essence of the Fantastic Four, mainly Ben Grimm. This is mainly a Ben Grimm issue, although other stuff happened, but Hickman distilled it down to what makes the thing tick. And it's not the first time we've seen the story. I mean, the on the cover you see the Rocky like exterior breaking away, and you see human Ben Grimm, and that tells what's going on in the story, which is Ben Grimm decides to drink the potion, or the formula. That sounds much more scientific. Potion sounds magic. the magics. You guys still on the call here?
Yeah, but we were waiting for you to say something funny.
Yeah, this is your time, Ron.
Really, what happens is if you say something very funny, then we will spontaneously laugh out loud.
Okay.
That didn't happen.
So he decides to drink the formula. He decides to drink the he decides to drink the formula, which allows him to revert to human form, but for 1 week, and he only do it once a year, and he decides to do it now. And so he does it. He reverts back to human Ben Grimm, and then him and Johnny Storm decide to go out and have a night on the town in New York and do all the things that he can't do when he's the Thing. So they just walk down the street with nobody looking at him. They go to the Giants game, the football Giants, not the baseball Giants. Which, by the way, I guess to the Fantastic Four is, look at the time. Like 11:45, they're walking right in Midtown, and 1:15, they're at the Giants game at the Meadowlands.
I guess he flew them there.
Yeah, I guess the Fantastic Car. I guess, but they were trying to be normal Joes. But anyway, so. But then 5:45, they go have an early dinner with old friends, which is a nice little nod. Steve Epting, Drew, and Stan and Jack, who they're having dinner with, which is kind of neat, which is kind of creepy because Jack's dead. But it was nice.
Stan, right?
Yeah, that's Stan. And then
Stan's dead too, right?
Yeah. Then 8:30, he goes to go to the superhero poker game, which this is the only thing I wondered. Can he do that as the Thing anyway?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I believe
he does it as a Thing all the time.
In slots Thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So I was like, that was the only thing. I'm like, is that the thing he can't do? Because he's the Thing. No, I think that's the one thing he can do.
It's kind of like going to see a shitty kids movie on the day that you don't have your kid.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but anyway,
can he raucously laugh like he is in that?
It's worth it for Nick Fury holding a card up to his forehead and laughing. Everyone else, I can buy it from Nick Fury. I was like, Nick Fury, really?
What are they laughing about?
I don't know.
Dude's got to cut loose.
But so, yeah, and so then, you know, they go on. They meet up with the modern-day Yancey Street Gang, which is laid-off stockbrokers and hedge fund managers, which I thought
that was very funny.
That was very funny. And they get into a street fight there. And then finally it ends with Johnny making the decision for Ben and driving him over to Alicia Masters' apartment and Ben going up and seeing Alicia and them having a nice touching moment. And it was just like, totally caught at my heartstrings. And the thing about the Thing is, and it's not easy to say that, the thing about Ben Grimm is that he's the tragic face of the Fantastic Four. He's what happened to them and them getting their powers, he's the one who was affected externally, and his life was the most changed by it all, but also has the biggest heart of the team. And he's the heart of the team that you root for and that you hope things can go his way. And any time it does, it's just so much fun to see. And so, like, I totally enjoyed that. But then at the same time, you know, which is interesting. This is the second issue of the 3-4-issue story arc, you know. So they were like halfway through, and I still don't know what's going on, you know. And Hickman is quietly laying the groundwork of, you know, we have Susan going off to visit the X-Men on Utopia to do something for Namor in terms of, you know, a meeting between old and new Atlantis, which is, you know, anytime you put Sue in Namor, there's sparks going to fly. And then ultimately it ends with Reed on the roof of the Baxter Building looking at some telescope, and the Silver Surfer coming up, shows up looking for some answers about that dead Galactus from Miller's run. And I love that Hickman isn't ignoring that all that stuff happened. And then I also love the way he wrote Reed and Silver Surfer talking, like just how Reed calls him, hello Norrin, like calls him by Norrin, like nobody calls him Norrin, you know, like that was nice. And then it ends with, you know, the fact that Silver Surfer's there on behalf of Galactus, who, oh, Galactus is here too. And it was just, when I finished reading it, I was like, that's what's the Fantastic Four, that's what I like about him.
You're right, it's a pretty perfect single issue Fantastic Four book.
Yeah.
And you're not even talking about the fact that Steve Epting is fantastic.
Well, and this is a preview of conversation later to come, but man, like, Epting nailed it, and in a way where, like, if you didn't tell me this is Epting, and then I read it, and then you said, oh, that's the guy who did Captain America, I wouldn't, like, he's not doing the exact same thing that he did on Captain America.
Right.
Like, it's subtly different. It's a little more, I don't know what it is in an art style, and maybe a lot has to do with the coloring and the inking and that sort of thing, but it's not exactly, in fact, like, it looks, some of the stuff looks more reminiscent of Hitch and Eaglesham before him. Like, it's consistent with the look of the Fantastic Four over the past couple of years.
It's not as dark and shadow heavy as Captain America was in general.
Yep, or retro,
it's
really.
A lot of the color, there's a lot of the coloring.
Yep.
This is fantastic. This is a really good issue. This was really good. I mean, almost everything about it, I loved all the different plot lines, they all had their own strengths, and I like the fact that the X-Men showed up. I like the fact that Galactus and Silver Surfer were the cliffhanger. I loved the street fight. I love the Ben Grimm stuff. Who doesn't like Ben Grimm? Ben Grimm is the tragic character of the Marvel Universe, and everybody loves him.
Yep. And
you always want to root for him. If good stuff happens to him, you always feel good about it.
And the fact that he got some time with Alicia, and he's, you know, and this is great. It's the first night. Like, what's going to happen the rest of the week? I don't know. But but I just like the pacing of the story. I like the, you know, when the Hickman. This is a real high point for him writing on Fantastic Four, because I feel as if he got the characterization between Ben and Johnny down to the point where, you know, when all the rocks fall off and Johnny plays the joke and acts as, oh no, it's much worse, you know. You know, like, he totally got the character interactions, and it was just a great little character piece on Ben Grimm, also while inching whatever story that he's got going on, which I have no answers for and no clue what's going on, and I'm absolutely riveted and I can't wait for the next issue. So
there's a lot of people that complain about Hickman not writing story, just sort of giving plot outlines, but this is pure story and character. This is, you know, this is nothing. There's no high concepts here. It's just interactions between Ben and Johnny, between Sue and Namor, between Reed and Silver Surfer. But this is all people interacting,
and it touched on everything that makes the Fantastic Four special in my mind. You know, I mean, and admittedly, little glimpses. I mean, barely anything with Sue and Namor, and barely anything with Galactus and Silver Surfer. But man, can you wait for the next issue?
No, you know, it's really, really good.
Yeah, exactly. And that Alan Davis cover, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the year of Alan Davis. Yeah, I don't know, I loved it. So it was great. So I was glad to read it, I was glad to enjoy it, and then no other book kind of, in my mind, came close. And admittedly, it tugs at the heartstrings, tugs at the emotions, tugs to me as a Marvel fan, because, you know, Avengers showed up, X-Men showed up, Galactus showed up. Like, it touches on the fact that the Fantastic Four is the family of the Marvel Universe, and when they're good, it's great.
If I had been picking, it had been my week, I would have had a hard time selecting, because one of the other great books of the week was also Ultimate Spider-Man 15.
Agreed.
Featuring new art by Sarah Pacelli, which was fantastic.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, and so just to clarify, we've talked about it before. Everybody probably knows this, but LaFuente is still on the book, and Pacelli comes in every couple of issues, so because LaFuente can't do a monthly year worth of bat. You know what I mean? So I think the average is going to be like 9 or 10 issues LaFuente, and then 1 or 2 or 3 from Pacelli over a year, which I'm fine with. Like, the two of them trading off, and because honestly, like, the look is so consistent, you know?
Well, it's different. I mean, you can tell that there's a difference. You can tell it's a different artist, but it feels of a piece.
Yeah.
It feels whole. I think that right away, and you kind of don't notice this as you're reading it, which is good because it's kind of a gimmick, but the first half of the book is just basically the same panel repeated over and over again.
I love when Bendis does that. I love when they play with a format like that.
And this to me feels like, we're going to call it classic Bendis.
Yeah.
You know, this is the Bendis. Like, people think that Bendis is... It's become a joke that his thing is when he writes the Avengers and it's just them just cracking at each other the whole time, and that's actually not what I think of as the sort of gold classic standard of Bendis. It's this kind of thing much more often.
Yep. And the thing about it too is so the first half of the book is all the sequence of four panels vertically across the page, and even if you look at it, there's a
horizontal,
right? I'm sorry. There's a synchronicity of the positioning of the faces. Like, because, you know, Peter's laying in his bed and the face is to the left, and then the next scene he's laying in his other bed and face is to the left, and then it goes to Mary Jane and she's leaning her hand in the cafeteria to the left. You know, like, it stays consistent for the first half, and then it flips when we get to Jameson. But it still I got about halfway through that sequence and I was like, oh yes, I was hoping the whole issue was like this.
There's a bunch of things that were really good. I think that for one thing, the whole Gwen Stacy, she was holding it against him, and you're thinking at home, you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. He didn't do anything. But they actually explained that, and explained it in such a way that you were like, okay, you're right. That would be tough to take. You could understand where she's coming from. And then the other thing is the radical shift of J. Jonah Jameson and his little speech to that emo Ben Urich.
That was great.
Yeah.
You love emo Ben Urich, by the way.
He's actually goth Ben Urich. Look at him. He's like the Sandman. sad face.
So yeah, so this is the fallout from the chameleon. So they've captured the chameleon, and you know, and it starts off with Carol Danvers giving Peter shit about being Spider-Man and telling him to stop. And then, you know, Aunt May being supportive, and then the Mary Jane Gwen scene was great, because those are two characters who are so, you know, because of the triangle, you know, and to see them, yeah, you know, interact was really wonderful. And then you get to the Jameson stuff, and you realize that, you know, Jameson now knows Peter's identity, and you think, what's the first thing he's going to do? He's going to tell it to the world, but he doesn't want 80 and says, no, we're not going to tell anybody, mm-hmm, which is, yeah, you know, which is great.
It's nice, because you don't want to just tell the same story that's going on in the regular Spider-Man, yep, book. So if you can make those diversions, then it's interesting.
Which is funny, because for a moment, and this is my own fault and my own, I was tired and whatever, but when he was in the hospital, I'm like, wouldn't they be more upset because the mayor got attacked? And I was like, oh, no, it's 616. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. I think that now that we have dealt, by the way, with Peter's hair.
Yes.
It's time to take a look at Iceman.
Dude, I had the same exact reaction. Oh, my God. I said, you know, we've conquered the hair. Now it's going to conquer the do-rag.
Yeah, like, can we move
and
on?
And also, listen, I don't know much about the kids today, but I don't see either of those two characters rocking
the basketball jersey tank top look.
Yeah. I don't, you know what? That's not those characters, I don't think. Oh, the do-rag really, and this is not the artist's fault.
No, it's been
this character for since the very beginning.
10 years,
of the,
yeah, yeah.
Yes,
10 years of wearing a do-rag.
That was a decade ago, you know? The gap switched over. No one's, you know, I mean, is he supposed to have like an M&M vibe? Because I don't think M&M's doing that anymore.
Right, yeah. Hmm. I'm with you. I'm with you there. I support it. So.
Otherwise, though, I mean, this is going to sound creepy. They made Mary Jane look cute.
Oh, don't watch where you go. Watch where you go.
But they did. I was like, oh, that's kind of, I mean, cooler than most kids are going to look. But that's her thing.
Yeah.
Really nice. Just really nice timing, that sort of page of the house where Gwen walks out.
Yep.
Great page.
It's a great page, because it's not only is it like the camera just moves. I mean, it doesn't move.
No, it doesn't
all.
Move at all. Doesn't move at
but
all.
It looks like it's slightly canted. It just looks slightly imperfect. Like the lines don't all line up.
It is. Well, it's a little slanted to the left, but it stays steady. And you just have the house with the closed door. Then the door opens. You see the silhouette. Then she's walking a little closer. Then even closer. It's like,
by making it imperfect like that, it just gave it a little something extra. I know it's like a tiny thing to harp on, but it's something I really noticed.
Yeah,
a little bit of tension.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was
yeah.
great. I mean, the thing is that Ultimate Spider-Man, Bendis and the artist that he uses on that, so often they do such little amazing things within the comic book medium that I think it goes unnoticed because it's Spider-Man.
I believe they're ultimate things, actually.
Yeah.
I don't want to get confused.
Peter Parker things.
Ultimate comic book Spider-Man, ultimate
science. I thought he said they weren't doing that anymore. That's my favorite line from the entire thing we shot in New York City. He goes, people aren't buying that.
Yeah, no, now it's Ultimate Spider-Man. That's what it is.
The cover doesn't say. Well, actually, yes, it does. The solicits still say Ultimate Comics.
Ultimate
whatever.
Comics, Spider-Man, Ultimate Time. Happy fun time.
So,
fun time.
Now
so
I know.
We need to mix up the schedule of the pick of the weeks.
I know.
Okay.
But I'm glad we didn't do it this week.
Okay, good.
Because, yes. And I know, listen, okay, I want this to be known. I know I get labeled as the Vertigo guy. And lately, you know what? I have been. Okay, but I went to the scalpel and I was like, I don't care what happens in this book. I'm not talking about it. I have nothing else to say about it, but it's not going to be my pick of the week. It was the last thing I read. I must have like choked up 3-4 times during the course of reading this book.
Motherfucker with the beard just keeps breaking our heart over and over again.
I didn't. Oh, man. I didn't add this to the script, by the way. Connor did.
I did.
It wasn't me.
Yep.
I left it off, but if you're going to, like, after it finishes, like, that's a pick of the week, easy, any day of the week. Holy crud. He used a trick that he'd used before, but it didn't matter because it worked so damn well, where he had the two characters, Dash and Carol, talking to each other, and they weren't saying anything, Kevin Arnold styled. And
they were talking in their heads, but not actually verbalizing what they were
Kevin
thinking.
Kevin Arnold style.
And then they went and did something I didn't see coming. Carol did. And I don't want to give it away.
The thing is... He used the device way back, and that was a pick of the week that first time when they were in bed together that first time, and they were talking about how much they loved each other but not verbalizing it. And this time their relationship is broken. It's over. They meet on the road, and they're both still in love with each other, but neither one will say it. And she's pregnant, but she won't tell him. And he's desperate to have her back, but he won't say anything. And he gives it sort of a half-hearted shot at the end, and she rejects him. And then the whole time I thought it was going to go another way. Like, I thought he's setting us up here for some sort of glimmer of happiness, and then just
no.
He just takes the feet out from under everybody.
Over and over.
And not even that, not just them, but the father. There's that Dash's father had shown up, and he doesn't like his father, but he's sort of tolerating him, and you could see them maybe reconciling, and then the FBI shows up and carts the father away before he can go meet Dash. And now Dash thinks his father abandoned him again.
Mm-hmm. And the I mean, one of the main things you can see the change in Dash is that he's the last page of the issue is him sitting in front of his mother's grave. So, and he's like, the last time you saw that, he was naked. He got, like, he was off his mind, and he had, like, frostbite from it. This time, he's actually just showing that he's cold, and he's sitting there thinking, and it's an opposite of how that other issue ended. And then the one other thing that was great was the opening sequence was this sort of fantasy sequence about how good things could be if they could just, you know,
if their lives were completely different, yeah.
If they had the courage to do what they to say what they meant, and right. to
make smash
changes.
Cut to them strung out in heroin.
Yeah. Oh God!
Smash cut to them strung out in heroin. Oh, and also just this cover. I don't ever talk about the jock covers on this, but this one's a really nice one. Like that stubbed out cigarette. It doesn't look real, but it just says everything it needs to.
Damn you, Jason Aaron! Your magnificent beard.
You know, here's a secret. When I was interviewing him, Jason Aaron is actually really good about looking you in the eyes.
He's really, he locks on. And
yeah, he really is. But I could not stop looking at his beard when he was talking to me.
Yeah.
I'm just staring at it moving around his mouth. I was like, yes.
And it's hard because he thinks you're not looking at him, and it gets awkward.
I know. It's
good thing you weren't on camera. Oh.
Oh. No, it doesn't read.
So, what is with the, like, I hate it when one writer has, like, every book he does come out in the same week.
Yeah.
Bendis used to get that a lot. But
yeah, no, and the thing is, I've heard writers like it. Like, I've heard of writers who, like, enjoy, like, you know, like, when all, you know, they're like, oh, it's my week, you know, but it's like, I would rather have it all spread out. That's my
thought. Only got a tweet once a week, then, or once a month.
I know, yeah.
I got two things to say about this issue, Captain America 611. I think you might disagree with one. I don't know yet.
Okay.
But one is, I thought this was... Story-wise, this was fantastic.
I will agree with that.
He keeps starting these arcs off great.
Yep.
The last arc started great, and each issue got progressively worse.
Yep, unfortunately.
So, but this one, again, I was like, damn, that's good Captain America.
Yep.
The second point is, I really like Daniel Acuna's art, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I thought it was a little bit different than his normal styles, but still that unique thing he does, where his art looks like no other art.
Daniel Acuna's on this now.
Yeah, I will agree. I will agree with you that there are times that I enjoy Daniel Acuna, and I think you're right. It doesn't look like anything else in anything. But I didn't see it on the cover. I opened the first page. I see the recap. I didn't look at the credits. I don't know why. I turned the page and I literally went, "Oh, Acuna," and I was not ready for it. And my hate and seething increased with every page to the point where, like, listen, here's the thing. You've defined a style for this book.
Yeah.
Daniel Acuna is not that style.
For 60.
I liked it as a different look.
Sure, maybe for a one-shot or something like this. But the thing is that, like, and we're going to talk about the next Brubaker book as well, which is the same thing, whereas, like, honestly, like, you got Mitch Breitweiser. Just put him on it.
That dream's not happening.
I know. Well, I'm going to keep ranting about it because
all
I
think you got the master of horror sitting right there. Yeah. And he's telling you. Yeah.
Exactly.
If you can tell me what that reference is from, then you are our people. That's what I'm talking about. I'm surprised for that.
Meanwhile, I thought this was the best looking book maybe of the week.
Oh.
I loved how it looked.
No, now, I couldn't say it. Like, there were pages. Well, the good news for you, he didn't draw faces. He didn't draw faces.
He does draw faces.
No, he didn't. Look at the page where they're in Avengers Tower and they're around the table and the fourth panel down, Steve Rogers in the forefront, Tony Stark's next to him, and at the end of the table is Hawkeye and Mockingbird. Well, show me where those faces are.
I don't know what page you're looking at.
Right, exactly.
No, I don't know what page. They're way in the background.
He's
indicating faces. There's faces everywhere, but... It's fine because Butch Geist is doing the next issue. So.
But the thing is, I almost say, give me Butch Geist over the knee-jerk reaction to this. You know what I mean?
I loved how this looked.
That is a weird thing to stick in the middle of a thing that's really a very one cohesive story.
Yeah.
I didn't read it.
The story was great. The story was fantastic. I mean, I was like, ooh, this is going to be good. It's just like, I couldn't stand Acuna.
How many times have you thought that through Daredevil and Captain America?
But then I pick up Secret Avengers coming off of the last issue, which was the... giving the hope upon hopes, that fantastic revealing of the Nick Fury twin or the clone that's out there, the LMD. Crazy LMD with the amazing art. And then we open up this, and not only is Deodato back, but it's fucking Iron Fist again, Shang-Chi and all this, like, mystic. And I was like, oh, way to completely pull me out of this now. Like,
this is my favorite issue of the series.
Oh, I thought the last issue.
Other than the last issue, which is sort of on its own, you know, out of, it's not, you know, it's sort of special. This is sort of my favorite issue of the non-Lark drawn issue.
Well, yeah, it's just that I don't quite understand what the direction is, and the thing is that I felt as if we get tastes of what the art should be on this book, and then they put another artist on who I don't want, and it's a preference thing. And Josh, you're right, it's a personal preference thing, but like, I'm not loving Deodato on this.
Right, well, he's the artist. I mean, Lark and them were just, that was just a special one shot. I mean, Deodato's the guy. He's done every other issue.
That's just that.
I don't think he was the right choice from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
yeah.
I don't either, and I don't hate it. I can look beyond it because I like this good concept. I like the team a lot. So for me, the art is tolerable.
Yeah,
if it was Lark and Aja, this would be the best book in the stands.
Well, yeah, it would be amazing. And even if it was Lark and Aja, I wouldn't be as critical of the fact that it opens up on Shang-Chi and we've got the Prince of Orphans, which actually is.
Didn't we all like that?
I did.
When it was Iron Fist?
I did.
Early.
I liked it longer than anybody.
I enjoyed this, they were actually doing what they were supposed to. This was a secret Avengers team that was doing undercover Black Ops missions in secret.
But I don't feel like this is Black Ops. This isn't what I expected.
They're sneaking around and parachuting and going through tunnels. I mean, they're not out in the open like the Avengers are at all.
Yeah, I know, but I'd rather have it be more with like a Hydra Nick, like the whole glimpse, and maybe that's the bigger story. But like,
it's totally the bigger story.
Yeah, I know, but I'd rather have that story.
You could not buy it.
I did like the fact that Steve in his bedroom has a framed poster of him and Captain America and Bucky saying buy bonds, which I thought was funny.
I should say buy war bonds.
Buy war bonds.
For some reason bugged me because it would say war bonds. Whatever.
The third book he had come out was the first issue of Incognito, Bad Influences. I did not get the variant cover. I wanted to, but I can't pay extra for a variant. I've never gone to my store looking for it. I'm like, did you get the variant? And he's just like, and James just shook his head. He's like, no, I didn't. And I was like, shit. Like, I actually considered like paying the money to buy the variant.
Like, it was like $6 at the shop.
Yeah. Well, no, and my store doesn't mark it up, but it's like only one person gets it or whatever. But he didn't get any, and I was like, oh shit. So yeah.
Yeah. I like this a lot. I like this better than almost any of the issues from the last.
I think it got way more. It's way more interesting now.
It was really interesting, and I found it was kind of funny.
Yeah,
like it was definitely like. I mean, I always do this, but you can kind of see like that. I'm stuck in this sort of thing that I don't want to be in, and it's my job. And it, you know, when you talk about like he's a guy who is a superhero now and doesn't want to be and doesn't care about it. How many comic book writers do you think that describes?
Because not that's the one to cover, that's for sure.
That's the only way that you can get by in the industry is to do this thing. And it just, I don't know, had a really like fun sort of sighing vibe to it. You know, but it was interesting. The story about the old man was not what I thought it was going to be. It was cool.
I love the throwback to the history and Lazarus and all. I think it came up with some, I agree with you that it's almost – more, I found this more interesting already out of the gate than the first series.
Sure,
I love the little chapter of the old man's problem where you know, like it got very, you know, like I felt more of the pulpy vibe than in the first one.
You know, I was trying to figure out while I was reading it, like when they show him sleeping with the girl, I was like, this feels so familiar. And then just now, I was like, all right, Sleeper.
It's Sleeper, yeah.
I mean, it is, and it's whatever. That's fine. The sequence of him finding the bomb.
Yep.
The next page was just, like the way they went from the one panel to the explosion to him jumping out was a wonderful sequence. Great storytelling. Really liked it.
Yeah, no, the art was good. When I started this issue first, I couldn't recall a single thing about the last man. that's how little it impacted me, my brain. I recalled barely who he was. The first half of the book, I was like, oh God, I'm going to drop this. This is not at all interesting. But then by the end of the issue, I was really into it. So
that was a real roller coaster for you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. I actually stopped reading halfway through when I did something else because I was like, this is really boring. I'm going to go do something else. And then I came back to it, finished it.
Yeah. I believe that Holden, I mean Zach, lives in the Empire State Building. I'm not sure. About that.
He was at her apartment. So yeah,
in the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
Nobody lives there.
First, awful place to live. You don't want that. I like how they drew her with a lot of junk in the trunk. Did you notice that?
He does that with all his women.
Go to the Empire State Building page and then go back one page.
Yep.
And then look at the first panel.
Yeah. Well, hello.
I think he's probably going a little faster through these because I don't think there's an upfront page. And that's totally speculation, but yeah. It felt a little looser than I'm used to.
It's definitely looser, not as detailed as his normal work. It was all right. He's pretty good.
I still love Sean Phillips. He's one of my favorites in the industry.
Oh, I just saw the panel. Wow,
yeah, that's actually
that.
Why I bought this. Was like
the junk in the worst.
Gonna, yeah,
because he likes asses.
Yeah.
Well, oh, you're the ass man, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I am the ass man.
That was a Seinfeld
reference. Ron, have we still not convinced you to buy Action Comics?
No, I'm not doing Superman. I'm irrational, not buying Superman.
This
cover's not in this book, Superman. Yeah. So
Superman family, I'm out. I can't do it. I can't have it.
I can't really go after you because I can't do it with X-Men. So
yeah, see, I mean,
although I've read things.
Yeah, you know?
I've read things. I thought I couldn't do it with Hulk. I was wrong.
Well, yeah, well, there you go. But that's not a whole. It's a whole thing. If I get Action Comics, then I have to get Superman and like.
I feel
like I have to. It's not. I know it's not you. It's me. I know that. But I'm just saying.
God, I want to throw my headphones down and leave.
Why? What?
You don't have. Oh, it's fine. Go ahead.
I definitely am an exercise in tolerance for you, Josh, aren't I?
Yeah, you are.
There you go.
You've made me a better man over time.
Just wait till he gets the hardcover for Christmas. That's how we do it. We force each other to read things. In this issue,
so passive aggressive.
I know.
Lex Luthor is dead. He runs into death from the Sandman.
Man, Bob Harris already tearing down the walls. Swamp Thing's next.
I don't doubt it actually. But so I thought this was really interesting in this issue. Lex is dealing with the fact that he's died, and he's not too happy about it. And then that death is a teenage girl, and he can't manipulate her, and he can't bargain with her, and he can't buy her off, and he can't do anything that all the things he does in real life. He's got no power now in the world of the dead. And then at the end, he snaps back into life because there's some bigger plan that involves him only getting a glimpse of life, but we don't know what it is yet. I thought it was really fun. I thought this is very much a character piece. It was basically 80% of it was two characters talking. It was very much like a play.
I don't want this to sound like it's going to sound, but I'm going to say it. I thought that it was really, as I was reading, I was like, this is a really, really wonderful exploration of whatever Paul Cornell's idea of Lex Luthor is. But at the end of it, I was kind of like, you know, like nothing happened. Like it didn't really seem like it advanced the further plot. Now it probably will in some way, but it was a little bit like it's kind of like, oh, it's like a dream sequence. Except I guess it wasn't because he wasn't really dead. I don't know. But besides that, on its own, is an issue. Like I thought that the conversation that they had, and actually even the characterization of death was pretty damn spot on from Neil Gaiman's stuff. But I really thought that the Luthor stuff was interesting, and I noticed him going through the stages before they'd sort of pointed it out. I was like, oh, look at you with your little trick. It was fun, but it was interesting. I don't know what to make of it yet. I think it's one of those things that time will tell if this actually.
I think it's part of the long game. I think this is setting up some subtle stuff for later, assuming we get there.
Yeah. Further though, I really like the plot of the Jimmy Olsen story. Way. I mean, like people were over the moon for the last part, but this one where they actually revealed what the plot was, and mm-hmm. it was kind of funny, and interesting. Like
aliens come to Earth because they want to throw a big party and they think that Earth would be the awesomest venue for that party.
So we say, oh yeah, that'd be great. But it turns out they party very hard.
Okay.
Oxygen makes them drunk because they have different. They're used to different atmospheres.
Is it Andrew WK's race of aliens or?
Yes.
They look like night elves actually.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Party. Exactly.
Party.
Jimmy's cute.
If I had any credit, there were a lot of words.
Yeah, there were.
A lot of words. This is the first half of it, so it's sort of a lot of explanation. But there's like one page here. I was like, "Oh, that's a lot of words." But it's fast paced. It's fun. It's talky. It was good. It was fun. That our oxygen drunk thing was really brilliant. Brilliant. That was good. That's that. Hey, how about the Mid Ohio Con? The Mid Ohio Con is coming to Columbus, Ohio, November 6th and 7th, the Greater Columbus Convention Center. David Finch and Adam Hughes are your guests of honor. Other guests include Kurt Busiek, Ethan Van Sciver, Frank Cho, Tony Moore, Sean McKeever, many, many more. The Midwest is a gathering place for many comic creators.
It's a good lineup.
It is. It is. There's a great area called the Creators Common where creators can be are showing off their comics. In addition to everything there, there are a ton of exhibitors, and so you can do all your comic shopping, get those back issues you've been looking for, maybe some discounted trades. November 6th and 7th, the MidOhioCon in Columbus. You go to midohiocon.com to order your tickets in advance and for all the other information on the show, probably like parking, stuff like
that. If you see Kurt Busiek asking about Shock Rockets.
Yeah.
Damn. Who's excited?
We all are.
We all are, yeah, totally.
Did you see the pictures of the book itself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Looks gorgeous. IDW does really good books,
they do.
Like production-wise.
If you're having somebody reprint your book, you want Scott Dunbier behind that project. That's what I've decided.
Yep.
Definitely.
Scott Dunbier behind the books, Ethan Van Sciver behind the piano.
If you're lucky.
But that's some crazy shit, by the way.
Superman 704, I didn't think it would be possible to make me miss JMS.
Oh, I feel
wow.
bad.
Who is this?
But I did. J. Willow Wilson, the writer of Up.
G.
Willow Wilson.
Air. Up is a Pixar.
Yeah, Air. Willow Wilson.
Air. Air. Up in the Air was a George Clooney movie.
Up was the Pixar movie. Air.
Wait, was George Clooney in this?
Air was canceled.
This was a side book because JMS has fallen behind schedule 3 issues in. Surprise, surprise.
Did she stick with the road trip or the cane?
Yes, in this issue, Lois really? Lane goes ahead of Superman to her hometown, which is expecting Superman shortly. And so she has all kinds of memories. She runs into her ex-boyfriend and his family, and then she thinks about her life. And
wait, how are they expecting Superman shortly? Has he published his walking agenda? Or
he's got some sort of...
They know he's on Route 25, and so he's going to show up.
He has a Twitter account. It's at The Real Superman.
I think I'm going to go here next.
Almost to Rushmark, Indiana. That's where they go.
Superman, he's typing on his little phone. And like, Superman, he goes, wait. Hold on, wait.
Damn these fingers.
Yeah. Cracked another one.
Fat fingers.
Hashtag pickup game. Oh, God. Superman tweeting.
There was
a lot of Twitter mentions in comics this week, by the way.
A lot, yeah.
Anyway,
so like, you can tell what a comics writer's obsessed with.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. The latest thing. But basically, it was really just Wonder Woman. Lois Lane wandering around.
You read this?
Doubting her life.
Oh, great.
And
you're trying to get me to read Superman. Not doing a good job.
No, he was trying to get you to read Action Comics.
Action Comics. I couldn't believe it. I was done with it. I went, wow, I wish JMS had written that because it would be more fun.
Wow.
I have something really good to say, but it's about a Vertigo book. we talked about, I think I put this in my Light Week 2 weeks ago because it's coming out every 2 weeks. Hellblazer City of Demons by Cy Spencer and Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy was originally the reason to come to this because he...
on Joe the Barbarian.
Yeah, but that ain't coming out right now.
No.
And so I was very excited to read that because it's coming out. And also... this is like a it's not, I don't know if it's out of continuity, but it's sort of not the current thing that's going on in Hellblazer. It's just a little side story. The first issue was pretty good. This one was really good. I mean, this
What's
was like
about?
There's like a virus that John is sort of patient zero for, and every time he comes in contact with somebody, they become incredibly self-destructive. So like there's like a, they show like a test animal and it's chewed its own legs off or something like that. So there's this he passes by this couple in the hospital and they just sort of walk by him, and then you cut to them going to her parents' house 2 days later, and you're like, well, what is this? And he goes and he's like, he's arguing to his wife that it was just a joke, and she says, I'd rather stick hot pins in my eyes than have dinner with your parents. And she's like, that's not funny. And they're sort of bickering, and then they have to sit through dinner with her annoying parents. And then he sort of shows this symptom of having the virus, goes in the other room and heats up a bunch of pins and shoves them in his eyes. And he goes, this is far worse than talking to your parents. And it was this really great sequence. And it was a bunch of little moments like that, little vignette stories. This really great thing with an artist. It was wonderful. So if you were thinking about picking up the miniseries, at least keep it on your radar for when the trade comes out. Beautiful too.
Another one to keep on your radar for a trade, Dynamo 5, Sins of the Father, issue 5 came out, and so the trade probably is going to be coming out very shortly. Last issue of this little miniseries, and it just ended really strongly, almost invincibly in its vibe, in that the big conflict with the villain was ended with one character punching through their faces. like very bloody. But but I was very happy to read in the back that there's going to be another mini Dynamo 5 miniseries in 2011. So definitely pick up Dynamo 5 when the trade comes out. Support it because it's one of my favorite comics. I want to see it keep coming out.
I feel like with Avengers versus the Pet Avengers, number one, we got the rug pulled out from under us because there's no Avengers.
I know, that was my only... The thing was is that I really, really enjoyed it. And then I sat there and I'm like, we didn't even see... I'm like, we get Captain America, Thor, and Iron Man, but they've been turned into frogs, like Throg. And I thought it was funny that Bucky Captain America as a frog has a cyber arm, which I thought was kind of funny. But I was like, oh, the Avengers aren't in this. But that said, I really, really enjoyed the interaction between the Pet Avengers. I thought this was I was laughing multiple times at some of the back and forth. Like Eliopoulos really has these characters down and their interactions, and he's doing a great job on it. So,
and if I was somebody who was to make fun of a guy like that, I would say it's pretty funny that there's a man somewhere and he's making up conversations that little super pets have with each other. But I wouldn't do that.
Thunderbolts 149. I thought I was reading through it. I thought, yeah, this is pretty good. This is not, you know, maybe not the best one so far. And then we get to the end, and I was like, oh.
What, when Crossbones got his power?
When Crossbones got his power, and then he killed the cop they were all meant to save.
Yeah, exactly.
Blamed it on the ninjas.
Yep.
The ghost saw him. I love the character work in this. There's just so much stuff going on, and every single character in the group is interesting.
Yep.
And it's that vibe from the old Thunderbolts where it's wavering on, like, you're like, well, geez, maybe Ghost wants to go straight a little bit. Or maybe, Juggernaut is a little bit, kind of trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But Crossbones is not.
Yeah. this is really a platform for Crossbones to shine. It's really. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, because it just for a little while, you're like, wow, they're kind of making me like Crossbones.
Yep.
And then he was aware of it. He's stringing me along. And then he was like, remember, he's a dick.
Yeah.
He was flamethrowering everything in sight throughout the entire show.
They were undead ninjas.
Yeah. And he's calling them bad words. And then, but I mean, I could see that that's the way you have to write a villain that's a protagonist. You got to kind of make him, you know, unclear. But when he shot the guy with his power, I was like,
the fact that he had a power, I thought was just like, oh, that's so nice to bring that little bit back. That was really good plotting.
Yeah, very good.
Have I mentioned that these hoodies, the Captain America Punisher hoodies, terrifying?
Oh yeah, totally. I keep thinking they're Millennium Falcons.
They just look like...
I looked at it quickly, like, and I was like, oh, is that a Millennium Falcon? And I'm like, oh, no, that's awful.
If you're a drug dealer, these are the Marvel hoodies for you.
That's what the kids like. They should be in Ultimate Spider-Man. Anyway, so those are the books we enjoyed. iFanboy.com/comics. List all the comics that come out every week. You can do your pull list and come back and rate and review them. We got a couple of reviews to share with you. Evangelion, number 11, reviewed Teen Titans, number 88. Gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And this is the first issue of Nicola Scott on art and J.T. Krull, superstar comic writer, on writing. And at the time of recording, about 7% of you made it your pick of the week. And Evangelion 11 says, this book was pure fun. Krull has a great grasp of these characters, and Nicola Scott's art is perfect for the Teen Titans. This issue sets up the new status quo for the Titans, establishing interpersonal relationships between the core group and a new villain for the first arc. Krull gives the team a new feel, making them appear more battle-tested and confident while retaining the teenage insecurities of their characters.
This is really good.
Was it good?
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
I've been talking to somebody.
He said it in his low, sexy voice.
Yeah, this was really good. It was the Titans is such a damaged brand of DC, but it's such a powerful one because there's so many Titans fans from the 80s and when it was super popular. And people want to like the Titans. And I think if you are one of those lapsed Titans fans like I have been for years.
Lapsed Titans fans.
Jump on 88. This is fantastic. At the end of the issue, Damian joins the team. You know, that's going to be interesting.
Oh, cool.
The only criticism I'd have would be, I don't know that Krull's got Damien's voice down just yet, but maybe it'll get there. But the art is gorgeous, and everyone else, he writes really well. So it's going to be really fun, I think, to have this mix of characters, and it's going to look fantastic. It was a really, really good issue. It was one of the best Teen Titans books I've probably read in years.
Wow, that's great. That's good.
And also, before the anime people speak up, it's Evangelion. I don't know why I know that now, but
Evangelion.
Now,
Evangelion.
All those ads did 2 years ago.
You got Krull right, though, so that was good.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Not a dead cat to be seen.
No, not a dead cat. That's good.
I'm not interested. CKL, at another team, the Justice Society of America number 44, gives it a 4 out of 5 for the story and a 4 out of 5 for the art, and the pick of the week percentage is a 3.7, so some people very much liked it. So far, ho-hum. It's Collins' art that lifts this above the crowd. Most of the book is done in a painterly style that's been in evidence on the Frontiers pieces. Front
pieces. Front pieces.
front pieces of the DC Legacy series, and it is especially good at representing the more mature heroes of the JSA. But for sequences where Jay Garrick's Flash is in action, Collins reverts to his much looser kinetic style. It's an interesting juxtaposition, and I'm hoping for more in the future. There are enough subplots to keep this series ticking along for a while, making this issue a good jump on point.
This is the new creative team of Mark Guggenheim and Scott Collins, as CKL mentioned, which is strange because he called it ho-hum, but gave both things a 4 out of 5.
Yes, well, I noticed that.
Yeah.
Collins has this new painterly style, which I don't love.
I don't like it.
I don't love it, but it's not as bad here, but he's right. When he does draw Jay Garrick doing his Flash business, he draws it like he used to draw the Flash, which I was like, why don't you just do the whole issue like that?
When he draws like the Final Crisis Rogues Revenge book, like when he draws in that style, it's so sweet. And when he does
that's when he does the Flash scenes in this, but the rest of it's paint. It's weird.
Yeah.
I understand why. I mean, it does make it seem like he's moving faster than the rest because he's so sketchy, but I can get over that. The story's actually really fun. Well, the interesting thing here is he paralyzes Alan Scott right off the bat. Yeah, wow. They fight this new villain who's really, really tough and paralyzes him. He's from the neck down. So we'll see what happens with that.
But if you got a power ring. Yeah.
It's true. So this has felt very back to basics, JSA. There was no 45 members. There was no rift between two teams. There was no Magog. It was just the sort of core members and a really tough villain to fight and some consequences. So it was really good, I thought.
Well, it seems like a good week for jumping on for two like classic DC teams. Yeah. So if you want,
I'll give it a little bit. See what happens.
Teen Titans, Justice Society, America fans, if you want to come back, jump on now. Now's the time to get back on monthly. So.
Yep. 88 and 44. Yep. That's half of the other one. Go to DCBS. They sponsor the show, but also it's a good place to get comics if you don't have a good shop around you. You can get your stuff mail ordered. Monthly specials up to 75% off, 40% off all major publishers, flat rate shipping of $5.95 on all U.S. orders. You can buy anything in previews, and there are over 9,000 paperbacks in stock. Again, order them all at once. That would be awesome. Track your orders online. Go to dcbservice.com.
All 9,000 at once?
Shipping pallets. Like,
yeah. If somebody orders all of them, then we are going to come up with something special for you.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know what.
I want the UPS truck to pull up and be like, all of it.
It's going
to
be like one of those. It's not going to be one of those brown trucks. It's going to be one of the gray, like, 18-wheeler trucks.
Yeah. Awesome, like, it looks kind of old. Yeah.
DCBService.com, right?
Yes.
All right.
And if you want to review books and stuff, go to ifanboy.com/comics, and you can rate and review everything, and we'll maybe read your stuff here.
Cool. So on to the email. Our first email comes from Ben from Austin, Texas, who says, I've been reading comics for 4 years now, and there's one trend that stuck out to me when it comes to comic book fans.
Uh-oh.
It's the trend of quote unquote, I hate what this writer is doing to my favorite character, but because I'm a fan of the character, I won't drop the book. So my question is this: is character loyalty a good enough reason for a reader to enjoy a comic even though they hate how the characters are being written or drawn? Just want to hear your thoughts. Keep up the good work on the show.
Oh, I'm gonna go over here on the moral high ground. You two have fun.
Well, I actually have shocking news related to this.
Uh oh.
Dropped Uncanny X-Men.
No. I was actually just talking
to somebody.
No, Moon Knight hasn't even launched yet.
Give it time.
I dropped Green Arrow.
Oh wow!
Yep. After when did Kevin Smith relaunch it?
1984.
Then after 27, 8, 9 years.
No, it was 1990. Like
was it 99? 2000?
Like yeah. 99.
2000.
Yeah. 2000. Yeah. So 10 years of reading Green Lantern ended this week.
Green Arrow ended this week.
So there you go.
I mean, look. There's all kinds of reasons to read a book, and if you're a person who really likes the X-Men, you're gonna want to read about them, even if you hate it. I certainly read my fair share of really bad Batman books.
I mean,
Hama and Scott McDaniel in the Orca story.
It goes back to what we said is that and we could probably explain it is what Josh is, what Connor is, what I am, but it's like if you go back with the baseball metaphor, and Josh, I apologize. Do you root for the jersey or do you root for the player? And for whatever reason, even when it comes to baseball, I root for the jersey, I root for the Mets, and I root for whatever players are on that team. And there's hasn't been a baseball player that I have followed off once he's left the Mets. So to take that metaphor even to comics, I read the X-Men books. I read Uncanny X-Men, no matter who's writing it, no matter who's drawing it, much to my chagrin.
Is that the only one? Like, are there any others that you have
Flash,
to
follow?
He was doing Flash. And
no, I'm sorry. I mean in the X-Men universe.
Oh,
meaning like does it, like I know there's always Uncanny, but I don't know what the other book is now. Is it X-Men or
X-Men, X-Men Legacy? Yes, I still buy it, although it's been rough. I love Mike Carey, but the story arc's been rough. I buy them all. I mean, X-Factor, X-Men Legacy, X-Force.
Buy them all. Yeah. I celebrate their whole catalog.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the metaphor is not exactly true. I mean, because you will also read stuff based on creators.
Sure, you know, I'll read stuff that a creator is doing. Just, you know, just like I'll watch a game where a player is player is. But like, But when it comes to the, it's not the only thing that I'm not going to push the metaphor all the way down the throat.
Love his swing. It's like music in a field.
But the thing is that there are books, you know, Uncanny X-Men, The Flash. It was Green Arrow. Now that's over because J.T. Cruel ruined it.
I think that book was dead long before that relaunch.
Yeah, no, that book was dead. That book, Judd Winnick killed that book.
By leaving.
Yeah, no, by with the Green Arrow, Black Canary.
Yeah, but remember how good the first chunk of him was? And that wasn't just because of Cliff Chang. That was genuinely good, but then it...
Well, we know the point where it crossed, and it's just not pretty.
No, but I think for me and for Ron, this is a very, very small group of books that I will continue to read because I like the characters, but the rest of them I'll drop without a doubt. I mean, pretty much it's only the main Batman books that I'll continue to read, just like Ron with the X-Men books, but I'll drop everything. Everything else is fair game to drop for me. Because if I don't like what the characters doing or saying, then I'm not going to enjoy it and I'll stop buying it.
You should enjoy these books that you're buying and reading. That's the whole point.
I mean, the only book that I haven't dropped since I started reading comics again like 12, 13 years ago has been Hellblazer.
I remember there being a period
there would,
like.
But you're right, but it was a new writer and she was only on for like an arc or two, and so I was like, well, let's read this, and then I was kind of not liking it, but then she was gone and Andy Diggle came on. Like, it's been, I wrote a piece about this, but it's been fantastic all the time, so I haven't really had to make that choice. But everything else I've gotten rid of. I dropped Captain America. I mean, that to me, like, when it's like that one person, one run, you know, like, it would take a lot for me to drop something like Fables or something like that.
Right.
It would have to be bad for quite a few issues.
Yeah.
But that's one person. If a different writer came on, then I don't care.
So that's what we think. You might be different. To each their own. Just enjoy the comics. That's all. And if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And we got some voicemail. Our voicemail comes from, I was got a question about another character.
Hi, iFanboy. This is Jackie from Queens, New York. On a previous podcast, you guys were discussing Darwin Cook's The New Frontier. And during this discussion, Josh and Connor both agreed that Jeff John doesn't get Al Jordan. My question is, with Black to Snyder over and over 50-plus issues of Green Lantern under his belt, do you two still believe that Jeff John still doesn't get Green Lantern? Or Hal Jordan in particular? If this is true, well, yeah. This is horrible. Well, thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
That was a long time ago, Jackie.
Long time ago.
4 years ago.
You're right. We did say that because I Rebirth was pretty good and okay, but then that first arc chunk of issues of Green Lantern, I didn't think was that good.
No, remember we said at the time we were like with the whole cowgirl and it was like post
Acuna.
No, it wasn't even Acuna. I forget who.
Yeah, Acuna was drawing it. Yeah.
Oh, was it? Yeah, but we're just like, ooh, they've got to get the. I was going to drop it. Like around issue 7. Yeah, totally.
I came back in when they did the Sinestro Corps special. I think.
Yep.
A lot of writers learn. I mean, they're humans. Bendis used to not be able to write Wolverine. Now he can. I mean, it's just, you know, after 4 years of writing the character, he got him, and they, you know, that's what happened.
And they get him, but they also turn it into the thing for them that works for them. Like, sometimes it does take a little while. And that's the thing. Things can change. You know, people will say to us all the time, well, you guys said that. Well, yeah, but that was years ago. You know, like things change. People get better. Your tastes change. The things that – I mean, I have a much different perspective on the kind of, like, art that I like now than I did even a few years ago. Appreciate whole different things. So
constantly evolving.
Yes, exactly.
He knows how to write Hal Jordan, I should think, at this point. He's got him.
All right, our last voicemail's got a question about writers.
Hey, guys, this is Tom from Tennessee. I had a question. Which writer is the funniest or best at comedy or satire? Since Steve Gerber has been gone, this has been brought up. Who basically would be the person you would say is the Steve Gerber of this era?
Who is the funniest writer going right now?
Or he says satire, too, so that's...
Well,
different things.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, Steve Gerber, that was like his thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Although he did other stuff. Hard Time was one of the last things that he did that wasn't really funny at all. It was actually a really good story.
Yeah.
But he's known for that, doing that one thing. I don't know if there's a guy of that sort of stature now that's that. But there are guys who could do it if that's what they made their thing. First name I thought of was Evan Dorkin. Now, he's not a huge name, but like, he does comedy and satire. in comics when he does comics.
Well, yeah, the problem is when he does comics, yeah, and he's great at it. I mean, like, if you go back to that, we were talking about that CBLDF story that he did, the Milk and Cheese story, was great.
Overwork.
Yeah.
But there are other guys who can do it. You know, I mean, it's lame, but Alan Moore was great at it when he did. Jason Aaron did something at one point, and he was really funny. It was in one of those, like, anthology things that we read. I don't remember what it was.
The problem is that there's not a lot of room for satire in comics, at least in mainstream superhero. Like, it's, you know, like where Steve Gerber was doing Howard the Duck, you know, kind of under the radar. You know, like, it's, you really want to look more in towards the indie underground alternative stuff for the skating satire stuff, but that's not...
That would never sell now.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly, yeah.
At all. One of the other... Warren Ellis is actually really...
I was going to say Warren Ellis, actually, yeah.
I mean, if you read...
Judd Winnick is really funny.
Judd Winnick's really funny.
Yeah.
But he doesn't get to do it in his mainstream books because he has to do mainstream books.
And I still say, I mean, we go back, but I think Bendis is naturally funny.
You know, absolutely.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. He's not satirical, but he's funny.
He's not satirical because, at least in terms of like Marvel Comics, he's not making fun of those things. Garth Ennis is actually really very funny in that way. He did like a whole series called Tales of the Rifle Brigade, which is like a satire of old war comics and things like that. And a lot of The Preacher was a lot of that too.
Yep. Zeb Wells is funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not like
a lot of guys, but there's no, the humor books are different than books that have humor in them.
And there are no comics coming out where they're like, oh, that's so scathing, I can't believe he did that. You know, like, I haven't read that in a while.
Bill Willingham, actually, you know, Bill Willingham in Jack of Fables and Fables with Matthew Sturgis, is actually a lot of satire in there, too. Yeah. It's a storytelling base. It's not really about comics, but that's... Right. God, you know what? Jack of Fables is probably pretty close.
You liked that book so much, you bought two of them.
I did buy two of them this week. Anyway. So.
All right, cool. So if you have any questions, call us on our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
We worked our way up to an answer. That's the way we got.
How can you help iFanboy? Well, there are lots of ways, and if you like the show, we appreciate the help. It's what keeps us going. It keeps us alive these many years. There wouldn't be an iFanboy without you guys. We appreciate it. The easiest way is to click on the banners on the website. Go to iFanboy.com. There are banners along the top and along the side. Click on those. Check out the products. They're fine products. Check them out.
Try the products.
Try
our products. iFanboy.com/Amazon. You can find the Powered by Amazon button. You click through that to Amazon proper, and you can buy anything you want, and we get a little tiny piece of that that doesn't come to any charge to you. It comes from Amazon. So we really appreciate that. It's even better if you make that your bookmark link, which is what I do and what lots of people tell me they do, and it makes it easier, but it really helps us out a lot. We also sell T-shirts. The Fear Agent shirt is almost gone, and there's a few left, but check those out. You can get them at iFanboy.com/store. It's the only official Fear Agent T-shirt available. And with Fury Agent wrapping up, it's wrapping
drawn
up.
Drawn by Jerome Pena.
Drawn by Jerome Pena. And the book's wrapping up soon, so you want to have your Fury Agent t-shirt before it's irrelevant. Yes. And finally, the best way to help us out is to become a member. Rick's not listening, so it's fine. But for a member, $4 a month or $42 a year is the lower level, or $100 a year or $10 a month is the higher level. You get your prize pack, stickers, buttons, and a comic from our collection, and the higher level people get a t-shirt. That's the best way to help us out at iFanboy.com. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Is Ron not in Rick's basement right now?
I am not. I broke free.
I thought that you were just naked.
He's podcasting
in the
on the run from the bog.
Listen, I don't want to talk about it.
He'll go fetal. Plop. Hey, giving away stuff. That's what we do, right? To people who are members. That's why it's very good.
We haven't in the past 3 freaking months. I hope you all enjoy this.
Boy, I can't wait for that red post to come down.
Man, I went to the post office the other day with about 6 boxes of stuff.
Jeez.
It was fun.
Did you send the big box yet?
No, I haven't sent the big box yet.
You got to throw
UPS,
your back
for, UPS freight for that one.
I'm going to have to take it to UPS. Yeah, it's not going to the post office.
You'd have to get a freight company.
Anyway.
Come down your street with a semi. This is the Walking Dead giveaway, which is apropos because, as you may or may not know, a show that is not sponsoring us is starting up this week. That's all you get.
This Sunday night. It's on tonight.
Yeah.
If it's on Sunday, you're probably watching the show.
Don't do it at the same time. You'll lose.
Yeah. It won't work.
What's in the Walking Dead giveaway? I think it's good.
There's a signed hardcover.
A signed hardcover by Kirkman.
By Robert Kirkman. And then there's a whole mess of random Walking Dead issues.
You don't have to list them out. It'll get you almost...
It's the last. It's from the last year or so. So there's a bunch in the 70s and 60s, bunch of issues. So it's a big old Walking Dead stack of books.
So the winner is Joey from Friends. No, I'm sorry. It's Adam LeBlanc.
I'm sure he never gets that.
I know. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Was this his brother?
So Adam LeBlanc won the Walking Dead giveaway. He did that by becoming an iFanboy member. You're eligible for our sporadic giveaways by becoming a member. Only members are eligible, usually.
Yep. So become a member. So stay tuned for more giveaways. They'll be coming soon, but we hope you've enjoyed this wonderful 3-month giveaway stuff. We also do other podcasts. In fact, we've got another podcast called iFanboy Don't Miss, which comes out every Monday, where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out this coming week. And this week, our buddy Chris Niesman's talking to one of our favorite creators, Jeff Lemire, about the upcoming Superboy number one. Is it number one?
Yes.
Yes, it's number one. Superboy number one. Jeff Lemire is writing and sadly not drawing. But so you definitely want to tune in for that. Jeff's awesome, and it's going to be cool to hear what he has to say about Superboy. So go to iTunes, search for iFanboy, subscribe to Don't Miss. You can get it on iFanboy.com as well. It's on a separate feed, so you got to subscribe to it. And it's only 15 minutes. It's perfect. Perfect for your commute.
And if you're on this feed, you will have probably noticed that a Booksplode episode came out. The rare and vaunted Booksplode, where I talked about Next Wave with our writers Jim Marskowski and Ryan Haupt.
Cool.
For quite a while.
Did you punch him?
Was it kicking and punching? It was exploding.
Oh, cool.
Exploding.
Yeah.
Finally, this is, if you listen to this on the day it comes out, it's Halloween, or if you listen to it the week, it's just been Halloween. So send us your Halloween pictures. Every year we put up our post of Halloween pictures and people love it. It's one of our most popular features every year. It's fun to see everybody's creativity and all the stuff they go out. And so send us in your pictures. Send them to Connor@iFanboy.com with subject line costume. Your deadline is November 3rd, which is Wednesday at 11 p.m. Eastern time. So do that. Send it in. We want to put everybody's up there as much as we can. Thank you very much. Also, put your name and, if you're on iFanboy, your little iFanboy name, so we know who to credit in the photos. Thank you.
And hope everybody had a safe and fun Halloween. And when you're recovering from Halloween, go to iFanboy.com, where you can read my Pick of the Week review, as well as all the other great articles and posts. Last week was awesome on the site. It was fun Walking Dead Halloween theme stuff. More to come this week. So go to iFanboy.com, read it all there. You can go to iFanboy.com/about to get all the links to connect with us social network-wise. Follow us on Twitter at Twitter.com/iFanboy. You also have a video show, which comes out every Wednesday. Last week was New York Comic Con Part 3. The last part of the epic Robert Kirkman finale, which was a high watermark for
or low one.
Or low one.
I think for me it was low.
I gotta admit, I've probably watched it maybe 3 or 4 times as it's come out, and I just laugh. It's very funny. And it was fun to do. This coming week, we're gonna be going back in time and taking a look at the classic first 104 issues of Fantastic Four. The early run Stan and Jack on Fantastic Four. So really excited to have everybody talk about those books again, because they were amazing. So check that out. Comes out on Wednesday, iFanboy.com.
You must make electronic contact with us. You can do so at contact@iFanboy.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. You heard the voicemails early in the show. Those are a model of how to get on the show. Keep it short. Have a good question. Say who you are. Yada, yada, yada. So do that. I ran out of things to say there.
Did you just yada 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 the end of the show?
I think you did.
That means we can stop. I'm Josh.
Leave us a review on iTunes for this show, for the Don't Miss show, for any of the shows we do, and for the video show as well. It really helps people find the show. If they're looking for podcasts, that's they search. More reviews help them find it. Really appreciate it. Takes you no time at all, and we really are thankful for your listening and your time.
Awesome. All right. Well, Connor, it's good to have you back.
Thank you.
Please don't go again. I missed you.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes, nicely, so fine.
All right. I just realized we're coming up on our 5-year podcasting anniversary, like in a week or two.
Oh shit.
Yeah. We're gonna have to look into that date. Anyway, so that's something to look forward to, folks. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Gail Simone is another satirical writer.
Yeah.
Okay, there. That's all I have. I'm Josh.
I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes. All we want to do is eat your brains. We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. You open up the door. We'll all come inside and eat your brains.
You say dumb Josh?
Yes, Josh. I said dumb Josh. Dumb Josh! It works. You know what? It plays that way. That's fine. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now?
I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.